Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Broadcasting Happiness, Creating Success Through Positive Engagement. Our guest today is Michelle Geelan, national CBS News anchor turned positive psychology researcher and the best-selling author of Broadcasting Happiness. Michelle is also the founder of the Institute for Applied Positive Research and is an executive producer of the Happiness Advantage special on PBS, as well as a featured professor of Oprah's Happiness course. New research in the fields of neuroscience and positive psychology is showing the incredible ripple effect positive communication can have on employee engagement, productivity, and happiness at work. After receiving her advanced degree from the University of Pennsylvania in positive psychology, Michelle developed proven techniques for positive communication that drive individual and team success. She'll be sharing them today. And now, Michelle Geelan, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here with all of you. Thank you so much for having me. And thanks for the warm introduction. So my work does revolve around positive psychology and neuroscience. And what is so exciting is to see what's coming out of those fields right now. The research that's showing this compelling case that when we get our mindset to be in a positive place, and when we broadcast that positive mindset to the people around us, it actually has a significant effect on business and educational outcomes. So much so that we're seeing that when we make small changes to the way we talk with other people and connect with them, we can see that you're able to fuel other people's levels of productive energy as well as your own by as much as 31%, increase your chances of promotion over the next year by 40%, and decrease the negative effects of stress like headaches, backaches, and fatigue by as much as 23%. So I'm so excited to share with you some of this research and also, most importantly, what you can do about it, because research, as we all know, is useless unless it's lived. I can know about all the advantages to taking my multivitamin first thing in the morning, but unless I actually take it, I don't necessarily enjoy the benefits of it. I think first thing in the morning is a really great place to start. So as was mentioned in my bio, I was formerly a national CBS news anchor. And so I started my morning and the mornings of millions of people off with oftentimes a dose of negativity. What we've seen in our research now in the series of studies that we're doing with Arianna Huffington and researcher Sean Acor, we found that just 3 minutes of negative news in the morning can lead to a 27% higher likelihood of you reporting that you've had a bad day. And that's as reported 6 to 8 hours later. So what's significant about that is that when we start our day off with that dose of negativity and just 3 minutes of it, we vastly transform how we look at the rest of our day. Right? It transforms how we move through our workday, how we approach the tasks that we do at work or the relationships that we have there. We're even feeling those negative effects as we're cooking dinner or playing with our kids that evening. So we have been investigating how we can restart our day, you know, start it in a different way and actually enjoy the positive effects instead. And so what we have found is that, you know, you can stay up on the news and know what's going on. We just have to do it in a slightly different way. We've looked at when we are exposed to a problem, if we can also expose our brain to potential or actual solutions to that issue, that we are increasing our creative problem-solving abilities on subsequent unrelated tasks. These are the things maybe you're doing later at work, by 20%. So the more we make those positive choices to stay informed, but also inspire our brain, show it that there's a path forward, and remind it that our behavior does matter in the face of challenge, the more that we fuel our long-term success. So I'm a happiness researcher now. I did not start off that way. I started off as a computer engineer writing code at .com that I worked for, dreaming about being a network news anchor broadcasting from New York City. And so if any of you know the world of journalism, you do not start your career in New York. You start anywhere. They'll take you. And so after sending 150 tapes around the country, I finally got one call, and I went to El Paso, Texas. I was very grateful for that opportunity. But I was able in 3 short years, actually, to work my way up from El Paso to Chicago to New York. Now, I tell you about the timeline, and I'm very grateful for the fact that it was such a short timeline, because I feel like when I got to New York and I was, you know, at CBS News on the national news, I had two news programs, I was still full of hope and optimism about the good work that we could do given our reach and resources. And so, you know, as many of you I know must experience in your jobs, it's, you know, you see the benefits of where you are and how, and the hard work and the investment that you've made to get you to where you are right now, and then how that can help you help others be their best and do their best, whether it's your colleagues or your teams. So in that moment, I saw what an incredible opportunity we had. The only thing is that my newscasts were full of stories of murder, death, destruction, natural disasters, bank failures, corruption, et cetera. And so what I wanted to understand was, how can we change our story on the news where we're still addressing the issues, but we're also able to talk about negative events, and this is not just on the news, but around the dinner table, with our at work, in a way that leaves us and others feeling empowered, inspired, and ready to take positive action? Because I know you all have felt this. You watch a barrage of negative news stories, and you start to believe the lie, right? The lie that your behavior doesn't matter. The reason is there's a formula there. It's problem, 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 problem. We're not often talking about solutions. In our businesses, if we're doing the same thing, if there's just all this negative information coming at us or stresses, our brain can buy into that same mindset. But there, as you know, looking back at that second study that we did with Arianna Huffington, there is a better way. We just need to be focusing on solutions. And so what we do now is we investigate the elements of our mindset that are most predictive of our long-term levels of success at work. And so to give you kind of a brief overview, a brief snapshot of what these three are, I would love to tell you about the success scale that we developed. And then as I'm talking about them, I want you to think about how your mind works, or maybe you might be quickly jumping to thinking about how your spouse's mindset is or your children's. So we found that there are three elements of our mindset that ultimately have the, taken together, have the highest levels of prediction of our long-term successes. And those three things are your work optimism, positive engagement, and support provision. So your work optimism is your belief that your behavior matters and the expectation of good things to happen. So I want you to think about, you know, the last most recent stress or challenge you had. Maybe you had a deadline at work, or you were not getting along so well with one of your colleagues, right? How did your brain respond to it? Did you believe that ultimately, when all is said and done, things will get better? And does your brain tell you things that say, hey, I can take steps, my behavior does matter in solving this problem? What we find is that people who score in the top quartile, the top 25% of this metric, they are actually significantly more likely to be highly engaged in their jobs, three times less likely to burn out at their jobs than the folks in the lowest quartile. So it's very predictive of long-term levels of success. So I'll tell you one funny story that I love that my husband, so my husband, Sean Acor, is he's very funny. And if you've seen a TED Talk that's 12 minutes, and you just laugh the entire time, that was his, the happy secret to better work. So he comes home from giving presentations at companies about our research that we do together with very, very funny stories. And so one of them he shared with me, I absolutely love. He said, you know, I gave a talk and I was talking about the difference between work optimism and or being a pessimist at work. And what he said was that the CEO at the end of the talk said, I absolutely love this research and I want to figure out how we can embed it more deeply in our company. Let me give you a ride to the airport so we can talk about it. So Sean gets in this guy's very nice car and puts on his seatbelt, and the guy gets in and doesn't put on his seatbelt, right? So Sean, thinking he's being very funny, turns to the guy and says, oh, you know, you don't wear seatbelts, you know? And the guy turns to him and says, no, man, I saw your talk. I'm an optimist. And Sean's like, no, you're an idiot, right? Because optimism does not stop cars from hitting us or reality from impinging upon us, as he always says. What we're striving for is, you know, an optimist puts on his or her seatbelt because they believe that their behavior matters. The true, true pessimist does not put on a seatbelt because, well, he thinks he's going to die anyway, so what's the point? What we're striving for in these moments as we assess the markets, as we assess the business climate, the culture on our team, we're looking for rational optimism, which is maintaining the belief that our behavior matters, but also taking a realistic assessment of the present moment. So we're connected to really what is going on there, but we believe our behavior matters in the midst of it, and we can create positive change. The second one, positive engagement, basically your story about stress. When a stressful event happens, do we go into fight or flight and we get even more stressed out, or do we look at this challenge as a challenge, as something that can bring out the best in us? And the difference between our brain looking at a problem as a threat or a challenge actually changes how our body responds to it, whether we're experiencing the negative neurochemical or the more positive ones that turn on our brain to its highest performance. And so we found that the people who are able to process stress in a more positive way and are able ultimately to be aware that they're stressed in that moment, see it, own that feeling, and then use it to their advantage, actually experienced 23% fewer stress-related symptoms like headaches, backaches, and fatigue. That was the result of one of the studies that we did at UBS. And the last one is support provision. So this is really interesting. Originally, we started asking questions that that tried to assess how much someone at an organization was being supported by the company or the people around them, right? Because that should be very predictive of your long-term levels of success. But when we flipped the questions around and instead started asking to get an understanding of how supportive you are of the people around you, right? For instance, your colleague is falling behind on their work. How likely are you to step in? Or someone needs a listening ear. How likely are you to have them into your office or cube and say, hey, let's sit down and have a cup of coffee and talk about this. What's going on? The more we understood the answers to those questions and how much support we provide to other people, that's when we really got data that was very, very predictive of long-term levels of success. So much so that that's where we found that a very telling statistic that says that if you are scoring in the top quartile of that metric and extremely supportive of the people around you, you're 40% more likely to get a promotion over the next year than the people in the lowest quartile. Scientific proof that what you give is what you get. Now, the reason I think this research ultimately is interesting is because of this. What we have found is that all of these three elements of your mindset are malleable. So no matter where you might score in terms of those, you can do simple positive habits that will help you raise your levels of any one of these three metrics. And so that's what I'll be going into more depth during, you know, the longer presentation and time we'll have together. And invite anyone who is interested in taking the success scale and also receiving their scores and an interpretive report, we make this tool that we test for these long-term predictors freely available, and it's at broadcastinghappiness.com. So I encourage you to check it out because it'll give you some ideas on if you're scoring lower than you want to on any one of these metrics, that, you know, things you can do to help you raise your scores. And so I think at this point what I'd love to do is open it up to questions, and so I'd love to hear what's on the mind of everyone.
Great. Thank you so much, Michelle. We have a lot of questions, and first is you talk about, you know, positive psychology being not contagious, but maybe, you know, being, you know, able to spread easily from person to person. And the same is true, I would imagine, for the negative person. I think we all know what it's like to be around a negative person, whether it's in the workplace or in our personal lives. How do you contain the negative person in a positive way?
This is an excellent question, and I think it speaks to our level of influence and power over other people. So I want, you know, if you're listening to this, to think to yourself, have you ever had someone say, you can't change other people? Has anyone ever said to you, can't change other people, you know? Or my favorite follow-up to that is, you know, so just work on yourself and don't worry about them, right? Well, the thing is, when I ask that question to rooms of people, I get just about everyone's hands going up. The thing with that thought, though, is what we're finding, it's not only disempowering, it's actually scientifically false. We're changing people all the time. And so when we buy into that, we minimize our power to influence others. I'll give you a really quick study that I absolutely love. You send three people who are strangers into a room, have them sit down and sit with each other in silence for just 2 minutes, which is totally awkward, right? But and then you you test their mood before and after. And what we find is that the person who was sitting there and was the most non-verbally expressive of their mood and their mindset actually significantly influences the other two people in the room. So if they were sitting there with their arms crossed or frowning or sighing, we've all been in meetings with people like that, right? They are actually having a really strong ripple effect on the people around them. But what we also found, though, is that if those people are smiling and relaxed and most nonverbally expressive, they actually have a positive influence on others. So all this is to say that the most important and first piece, I think, of helping the situation when dealing with the negative people at work or at home is first to see your power. You are constantly changing them all the time. And so when we lose confidence in, you know, approaching a negative situation with positivity or saying to them for the 40th time, you know, hey, things will be okay. I mean, we should actually have, you know, a reinvigorated amount of confidence about doing that, because while they might not change exactly on our time schedule or be more positive exactly when we want it, they are changing. And then ultimately, a really good strategy is to bolster your own positive resources. So I often recommend a very simple habit that we've heard from, you know, the beginning of time, but now as a scientist, I understand the mechanics of how to do it, is this idea of writing down things you're grateful for. 3 new and unique things each day. And if you can, include a line about why you're grateful for them. Be specific. You know, I'm grateful for my health because it helps me play outside with my kids. And that could be for, you know, for one day. And your health the next day might be related to something else. The more that we bolster our positive mindset, the less negatively influential those negative people can be in our lives. And ultimately, the more positive we are, we're able to help all the other people that are around that might be suffering from the negativity of that person, help them see the positive as well.
Great. What led you to write your book, Broadcasting Happiness Now?
I think that we are at a very important time, and it's on two fronts. First of all, I think the media is hitting new levels of needing a reboot, and especially in light of some, you know, more recent events, I think we're seeing that the formula is not working. We're seeing that people are often disengaging from in very important stories that we need to be engaged with, and so I think by retelling stories in a different way, in a more empowered and activated way, we can actually better solve our world's challenges, but we just need to restart what we're doing. But the other thing is that there's this amazing movement that is at an incredible clip right now in health and well-being. People are seeing now that there's no longer a strong case for working yourself through all hours of the night, having no work-life balance, being so focused on deadlines and goals to the detriment of every other part of our lives. You know, I was just recently in New York, and Arianna Huffington launched her new company called Thrive. She is a strong advocate for, you know, something so simple but so crucial in our lives, which is just get 8 hours of sleep, you know, as the first step. And then if we're doing that, how else can we find balance and not glorify the sense of working yourself so hard and being productive, you know, glorifying the busyness and be productive, but instead loving ourselves to the point where we're valuing having a balanced approach, eating well, sleeping well, connecting more deeply with the people around us, having our personal hobbies and activities, and still being able to be successful at work. And there's absolutely a way to do it. It's, I think, largely about changing our own personal mindsets and then also the culture.
Okay. And a number of questions going to the notion of how we choose happiness. You know, I think there's probably not a person out there who hasn't felt down or discouraged at some point, and or you know, gone through a, you know, perhaps a tragedy or a loss of some sort. How do people choose to be happy, to be resilient in the face of something terribly painful or tragic?
There is absolutely a choice. I think for some people it's easier than others. I was one of those people who, in my mid-20s, I experienced a year-long bout with depression. And so I'm so grateful for that experience because it has, you know, it's just informed the research I do and I think helped me understand things on a completely new level. And I know depression is different for everybody, and the answer to help walk ourselves out of it is different. For me, it was exercise and one of the positive habits that I talk about in my book, fact-checking, you know, fact-checking those anxiety-producing thoughts in a way that isn't just a rah-rah cheering you on speech, but it actually changes how I thought at the time. And so I think, you know, the choice to be happy, it's available to anyone. It's just understanding the mechanics of how we do it. And what we're seeing now out of positive psychology, and I document many of these in my book, it's you just need the right tools. It's those small positive interventions that help our brain see that there's another side of the story, help our brain see those fueling facts that can move us from a place of disempowerment or feeling stuck to a place where we are empowered, where we're feeling more resilient, we're more optimistic. And so doing those positive habits like the gratitudes or, you know, one other that I think is absolutely phenomenal is this idea of emailing or writing out a handwritten positive note to people in your social support network, like really quick one, right? Two to 3 minutes, 3 to 4 lines. Nothing major because you don't want your brain to say, wow, I just wrote a 30-minute note to my mom. I totally made her cry. It was an amazing mountaintop experience. And now I'm exhausted. I can never do that again, right? So instead, we want to make it a daily practice. But by meaningfully praising or thanking someone in our social support network, new and different, even just, you know, so we advocate doing it for 21 days, what that ends up doing is that it reminds our brain of all these people that really care about us and have invested in us and our happiness and our success over the years. Because you can reach as far back as your track coach from high school if you need to or whatever it is. But but by doing those simple positive habits, what our brain starts to see is a new picture of reality, and it makes that choice towards happiness easier for each of us.
And doesn't the brain actually change when a person is happy? Is happiness prolonged happiness something that actually changes the brain over time?
Yes, so it's amazing. Neuroscientists have been able to see that by day 28 or 29 of even doing something as simple as keeping up a gratitude practice, new neural pathways are being formed in the brain. The brain actually lights up in a different way. So the brain is just like a muscle, like if you're going to work it out at the gym, right? So the more that we work it out, the more that we help it see the positive parts of our reality, the easier it becomes. Our brains, incredible processors. We can process 40 to 50 bits of information every single second of the day. The challenge is that we're bombarded every second by more than 11 million bits of information. So what that means is inherently there are choices. We've all been in this place where at one point or another in our lives where, you know, you're just like, it's so easy to see the negative. Oh, that person's driving me nuts. Oh, this room is not set up the way it was supposed to be. Oh, my commute was so hard, right? And so we kind of get stuck in that pattern versus getting sort of quote unquote stuck in a more positive pattern where we can see the best of situations and the silver linings and the things that we can do to create that positive change. All of those are patterns. all of those are learned. Yes, our genes and our environment play a certain amount of role in creating that, but it's all malleable. It's a lot of it to do with how we process the world and the habits that we keep.
Now, you have a new PBS special, Inspire Happiness, and in it you share 5 strategies to help for someone to help those around them get unstuck and move forward. Could you go through those 5 strategies?
Yes. So I hope everyone will look up their local listings and tune in, because we put our heart and soul in this program, Inspire Happiness, and we are trying to provide that roadmap for people who are getting stuck, feeling as if they're having that same type of conversation over and over with somebody that they're hoping to help, right? So it's your son who's getting a C in math and is just, you know that he's capable of so much more, or a spouse who's just being really negative and you'd like him to see life in a more positive way, or whatever it is. You know, whomever you're talking to, what we're trying to do is provide those tools. So I think probably the best thing to do, I'd love to give you one, because just because they take a little bit longer to explain. And this is my favorite one, and it's called Spotlighting the Right. So Spotlighting the Right is this idea that for a period of 1 week, for the person that you're trying to help, either help them see the best of their potential or help them see a more positive side of life, you just talk about the positive with them. And in particular, you're just pointing out all the things that they're doing right in an appreciative way. So every time you can, you spotlight their right behavior. I'll give you a concrete example, which I absolutely love. So a friend of mine came to me and said, you know, my husband is not helping out around the house. He's driving me nuts. He's putting his dirty gym bag on the table that I just wiped off, and it's killing me, you know, and they have 2 kids, so it's not as if the workload is light around the house. So we devised a plan, and she decided she was going to spotlight the right. So even though things were kind of driving her nuts that week, for 7 days, she didn't nag him about anything. All she did was praise him for the things that he was actually doing right. Thank you so much for, you know, she would say, ordering pizza tonight. That gave me time to hang out with the kids instead of cooking. Or thanks so much for loading the dishwasher. That was huge, right? Acknowledging specific moments. And it was amazing, because by Wednesday, he fixed a leaky faucet that had been leaking for months. On Saturday, he cleaned the dinner table. He hadn't done that except for when his mom was there, like a few months ago. So his behavior started to change. But what was happening there was she was saying to him in many different ways, in specific ways, you're a helper. You're helping me. I'm grateful for it. Thank you so much. And so when he thought about things around the house that needed to be done, well, I'm going to help, because helpers help. She changed the self-concept, and I think that is remarkable. So it's a strategy that you could start using today.
And it sounds as though the strategy that this woman used with her husband is something also that parents might use with their children in raising happy children, that these are strategies that would also work in parenting.
Yeah, so this is something we've been experimenting with our son. We have a 2.5-year-old, Leo. I adore him beyond measure. And it's interesting, you know, having 2 happiness researchers married, because there's a little bit of pressure to raise a happy child. But just from our own, you know, anecdotal experiences, what we're trying to do is apply this in the sense of, you know, calling him out for all the times when he's doing something really well. So we don't follow him around and point out every last little awesome, cute thing he's doing, but in the departments where it actually matters to our happiness and well-being as a family, we do. Hey, thank you so much for going to bed. You're such a good sleeper. You slept really well last night. Sort of this drumbeat, you know, or if, you know, the car seat, and getting into the car seat sometimes can be a challenge. So when he does it really well, we make sure to make a big deal and point it out. It's just a simple thing, but I feel as if it's made a difference. And I've talked to, you know, hundreds of parents now about some of these ideas. And the ones that have used this, they say that they've noticed a marked difference in their child, even just trying it out for a few days. I think we want to be pulled towards the best of our self-concept, or the best of who we are. And especially if someone else who we love and care about is seeing it you know, we're seeing ourselves in their eyes and they're seeing us well. So the more we can remind those children of the best of who they are, I think that can really help.
Great. On that positive note, that's all we have time for today. Today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email letting you know when the podcast is available. Our thanks to Michelle Gielen, and thanks to our listeners for joining us today.